go explain evolution to the monkeys.
God damn you all!
Welcome back, pod people, to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I'm Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And as you heard in the opening, we're doing more Planet of the Apes. Tonight's episode is about Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Getting right part underneath.
Part 2. I mean, I think the script in part 2 suffers a little bit, mostly from Charlton Heston, like, not wanting there to be a sequel and fighting tooth and nail to make sure that there weren't any more movies after part 2, and failing. Because the stuff that's, like, the worst is the fact that they, like, shoehorn in a brand new character, and his explanation really doesn't make a lot of sense that he was following Charlton Heston's Taylor character. But he essentially takes over for Charlton Heston. He's not wrong by thinking that, you know, Planet of the Apes should have been probably one movie and over. Because a lot of the good ideas from part one don't necessarily carry over into part two. But I don't think it's terrible.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I guess you have to think of, like, sequels weren't like a common thing in like American cinema. I mean, what's like the, for 69? Because I think the first one was 68. Yeah. I think this is 69, 70.
This is 70. It took an extra year to come out.
You gotta, like, no one else was doing sequels. Nothing. This was, as I was, like, watching one of the behind the scenes, and one of the guys points out, like, this all predates Star Wars. Like, Star Wars was kind of one of the earliest, I guess, technically. When did Indiana Jones come out? Is that around the 78? So that would have been right around the same time. The first one, I think, was 78.
Maybe. I mean, you technically.
I think so. I'll just go with it. We'll just say that George Lucas was doing all the all those series around the same time. And so this was like, this is definitely predated all of that.
I mean, you have James Bond that has a lot of sequels, and I guess like the Universal Monsters had a bunch of sequels.
But those feel like anomalies. Like, those aren't, it's not the standard. It's not like what we're used to today where everything has to be a franchise. Like, yeah, like the closest I was thinking was like, you know, Godzilla and Gamera, like those films were series of stories.
I mean, part two feels a little bit more like Indiana Jones because it has a weird couple action sequences in this movie. Also, towards the end of the movie, where the protagonists are sneaking around while the apes are doing things, really reminds me of Indiana Jones, you know, where he's off and the Nazis are, you know, breaking into something or digging something up and they have to sneak by. It really had that vibe to it.
Yeah, I do agree with you, though, that it is a weird. I thought the same thing when I watched this of when he lands, the Brent character. It's just a two-man ship, I guess, him and the captain. And, yeah, they just keep going, oh, we're on a rescue mission for Taylor. And, it doesn't make any sense when you think how they, like, went through some sort of, like, wormhole in the original film to get to where they are now. That, like, how long did they wait, like, for him to show up around the exact same time? Like, did they wait, like, 6 months and then go, oh, we haven't heard back from him, quick, send out a rescue mission, like, what the plot, the way that worked out, just it always did seem very shoehorned and added in.
I was always under the impression too that Taylor wasn't planning on coming home ever. Like, they had some sort of exploration plan in their head where they're like out there looking for alien life, so, and they already were talking about it in the ship before they go into their, like, deep sleep, their hibernation, that they're not, you know, they don't know when they're, like, everybody that they know is dead. I think they already bring that up. And in this movie, they bring up the fact that everyone's dead. Like, it just dawned on them. I was like, well, that doesn't fucking make any sense. Like, I think you would have known what you signed up for. The guy's like, my family's dead. I'm like, no shit, your family's dead.
And kind of like,
explain this to you.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like how we were talking about on with the first film, like their plan was to colonize whatever planet they landed on. That's what that woman was there with them. They kind of described it like, oh, we would start a new society with her as the, you know, we'd be Adam and Eve. So it's like, yeah, it really does feel like that was the point, that they were like going to probe some deep space like planet and land on it. And yeah, that there was no plan for them to go back. So the fact that there's a rescue mission, yeah, doesn't make any sense, really.
It's also funny that it's specifically for Taylor, who's the protagonist of the four characters, we'll say, even though Stewart's dead.
Yeah, they never mention any of the other characters. They only mention Taylor.
Right. They're never mentioned. They're looking for Taylor. They could have made it as bad as Taylor forgot his luggage, so I was just trying to get it to him before he went too far. Yeah, it would have made more sense if they just left it mysterious, like he didn't understand why he was there or what was going on.
Yeah, or if there was like two missions and they both ended up on the same place, like they were like maybe there was two like side by side missions that were going to different areas, but they both somehow ended up at the same place, like through, you know, wormhole or however they want to describe it.
I mean, it's clearly the same ship. The ship looks the same. So, yeah, I would kind of believe that. Yeah, I don't know. There were a lot of small things where I felt like they rushed it and it could have been nicer. For example, when you meet the mutants and they're worshiping the bomb, which is an atomic bomb, I thought that it would be better. It dawns on, like, every time I think about it, I thought it would be better if they talked about their god, but you didn't see the missile until they brought it up at the end.
Yeah. That'd be more interesting, like, hide it and make it more of a twist.
Yeah, like, if they're like, oh, we're about peace, and then they bring the missile out, and they're like, well, what the fuck? That's a missile. Well, it's the most peaceful weapon there is. It'll get rid of all of us. You know, like, because this movie just has a bunch of weird ideas that feels more like a first draft and doesn't feel like Rod Serling. Like, he's definitely out of it.
Yeah, well, this was written by the one of the producers, I think Mort Abrams. So it's definitely one of those, I guess they said they were going to bring Serling on initially. And I don't know if he even wrote a draft, but there was like some sort of plan to bring him back in, but he wanted to change too many things. I know in the behind the scenes, it was some sort of interesting thing where the whole point or the whole plan, I guess, for the sequel, the way that somebody originally wrote it, I can't remember if it was Serling or somebody else had the idea, or no, this was Pierre Boulez's idea. They asked him to come up with a follow-up script, and it was going to be that Taylor starts like some sort of, him and Nova start their own colony of people, and he raises the kids to speak like he does, and, you know, makes them smart, and then they would like battle each other and go back and forth. And then, some sort of weird reveal that the apes, the final shot was going to be Zaius was going to be in a zoo. They would have wiped out all apes other than Zaius, and he would be in a zoo on display, and people would walk by and go, oh, say your name, monkey. And he would just say like Zaius. And that would be the final shot of the film. It's a weird idea that he came up with.
I don't know. A lot of these ideas kind of echo into the sequel. So, I mean, it's somewhat kind of there in the third one.
Yeah, a little bit.
I do like part two. I like the idea of them bringing these mutants on that are like more evolved human beings that speak telepathically. They're not as good as the apes. I really wish I didn't spend as much time with them. They kind of had the vibe of the future that's in Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
They do a weird thing too, where they like take off their masks and they're like, they're deformed from, I guess, radiation and not being in the sunlight, which felt like it would be something from a Twilight Zone, not well written, but somebody trying to be like, oh, what'd be a cool twist that would be in the Twilight Zone. They take off their faces.
Yeah. I think that may be the biggest problem with this movie. Kind of how you're saying they focus, I don't want to say like too much on the mutants, but it just ends up feeling like kind of a little bit. They spend time with both of them and it makes equally both of them don't seem all that interesting. Like, you know, they added in General Ursus as the leader of the the gorillas, who's another character that just kind of comes out of nowhere. He's not in the first film at all, but suddenly he's the leader of the gorillas, the leader of the armies, and he wants to go out and wipe everyone out. They have that really weird scene where the apes like battle off the chimps that are protesting for peace. And then it goes like a weird, like, looks like handheld camera footage. Like it's supposed to look like Kent State or something like that. Like it's definitely supposed to look like a riot for like the Vietnam War or something like that. And it just comes off like very odd in the middle of this film.
When they go too simplistic, that's what always kind of bothered me. It's not terrible. It really isn't terrible in this movie, but when they cut to Ursus and he's doing his, like, they're setting up this character, and for some fucking like, there's a lot of things in the story that doesn't make sense, and we can cover all of it. But when Brent is brought back to, essentially being brought back to Zira by Nova so that he can talk to somebody, and he discovers the City of the Apes, it really seems like a pathetic city when there's maybe 60 apes tops. It seems like it's a city meeting or something, and they have all the apes separated, and now you can really tell where they fit in this society, which they did a fine job with the first movie. So I don't really think they had to have them all like segregated like that, but they chose to. I liked Ursus. Like, I think he is a strong character in this movie compared to almost everybody else, but unfortunately, unlike the first movie where we both said that we like Zaius the best, Zira's great, Cornelius is great, but they kind of just don't have as interesting of a story. Like, their characters aren't as interesting. Yeah. And I felt like if you had more of time with them, which you might later, they'll become more interesting characters. So, yeah, he was definitely the most interesting. Brent was driving me crazy. I also think Brent seems like a very weird name for somebody that's that old. I'm sure it's a last name, like how George Taylor is Taylor.
Yeah, I think so.
I hate when small things like that bug me. They're like, my name's Brent. And I'm like, Brent?
That's a weird thing, and it does very much seem like I don't think they necessarily planned all of these films out in like,
I don't think they in did any sort all. Of
order. Like, it was literally just like as soon as they finished one, they went to the next one and go, okay, what's the idea? So it is weird that Cornelius and Zira are such big characters in the first movie, and then, yeah, spoiler alert, they're big characters for the rest of the series. But this is the movie that they kind of just get like pushed to the back, where they don't, they just have like two scenes, the one where they're at the ape meeting, and then they have the scene with Brent. Well, I think
it's, they're big in part three, and then Roddy McDowall ends up playing different characters in the other ones.
Yeah, later on because he plays Cornelius's son. I can't, at the moment we haven't gotten that far, so I can't remember what the name of.
I think that's Caesar. Oh,
Caesar, yeah, that was, yeah. I should have remembered that, because that, that plays into the later reboot. Yeah, Caesar, that's who he ends up playing later, which, yeah, this is like the only apes thing that he wasn't involved in. Although the guy that got to replace him actually sounds close enough that it's not like super jarring when you go.
I didn't realize it wasn't him. So if you're telling me it's not him, I mean, I know it was only a scene and that was it, but I could totally believe it was him.
The guy that does the voice is actually pretty good at, I don't know if he's also Scottish or anything, but he does a very good job at mimicking Roddy McDowall so close that you don't even, if you didn't pay attention and you just watch all these movies, you don't even notice that he's not really in this one.
He's Crispin Glover from Back to the Future 2.
Yeah, they just put him in the makeup and
they just found a really good, yeah, they just found a really good replacement where you don't even notice it's a different person. Yeah, it's just old makeup.
Yeah, Brent's such a weird character because they definitely, like, well, the actor, they definitely, I think, just wanted to find an actor that had, I mean, basically the same look as Charlton Heston. He has the same color hair. They're like the same height. They both have like the same jawline. He has a beard like Taylor did in the first film. Like, they basically really did just go and try to pick an actor that looked identical to Taylor.
I'm assuming it's more for like a poster or a teaser or a trailer.
Yeah, because he looks, at a quick glance, you don't notice him.
Although, you do have Charlton Heston in the movie. Charlton Heston said that he would come back if his character got killed off early. I mean, I guess in the total runtime, he still has a good, like, 20 minutes. I'm pretty impressed for most people that want to be killed off in the sequel. They die within, like, 4 minutes of screen time at that.
Yeah, they have him in there for a good while, which I guess, well, he tried to, like, fight him on that because, yeah, he wanted the movie to, like, start with him dying and then it just move on, but I guess the producers kind of said, like, well, that's, you know, that's not interesting. We can't just kill you off immediately. We have to have you at the end of the movie, too. And they're like, I guess they had to, like, promise that they would still definitely kill him at the end of the film. They couldn't leave his character alive. They had to, like, guarantee that he definitely would die. Because I guess he fought him on that. But, yeah, I think they said all of his scenes were only shot in, like, 8 days. Like, they went pretty quick for him.
Yeah, Heston said, this is his quote,
Fox is now willing to accept my proposal to do a brief transition bit for them in their new version of Apes. I don't think it's a good idea, but of course I'll carry out my promise to them. I pointed out to Dick Zanuck that while I sympathized with him from a corporate point of view, as an actor, there was really no sequel possible. The only story you could tell had been told. Anything further would just be adventures among the monkeys. While this might be profitable, there was nothing new to act in it. Still, as Dick said, they couldn't really undertake a sequel if I weren't in it at all. Moved by this wistful observation, I offered to appear in the opening sequence if they'd kill me off.
Heston says,
they asked me to simply disappear in the opening sequence and be killed off in the end. I agreed, thinking I could end the whole thing with a death that included the end of the world. I sold them on this, but they were cleverer than I. They still made several sequels, though without me.
Yeah, you can't keep them down. That is it's an interesting thing too, of considering how well the first film did. I know they said that too many of the other films at Fox were all failing, so they had to cut the budget. I think the first one, like, it says like somewhere like just under 6 million, like 5 to 6 million, and this one was made for half of that, like 2.5 million. And they said almost 90% of that had to go to the final set, that huge underground labyrinth. That's where like most of the budget had to go to build that whole thing.
Even like the subway system seems pretty elaborate.
Yeah, that's where like all of the budget goes on this film, which it definitely shows. That's why they don't necessarily have a ton of huge actors in it, other than some of the ones that come back. Although I know originally they said, and I didn't hear, oh well, I know what the reason was, but Orson Welles, they wanted him to play General Ursus, and he refused because he said no actor should hide under makeup, was his exact reasoning.
He's already done blackface.
I mean, didn't he? He wore a fake nose for Citizen Kane, I think, didn't he? So, you know, he's hidden under makeup.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he's a lie. He hid behind...
He's a liar.
he hid behind the voice of Unicron.
Right.
He's hidden he's before. But yeah, that's a weird thing, and I don't know. I would like to imagine what that movie would be like with Orson Welles as General Ursus.
Edward G. Robinson was supposed to be Zaius, and he didn't want to because the makeup was just too long to put on. He did the tests, so it sounded like... I think they had a couple big-name people, and Heston was the only one that stayed on.
Yeah, James Brolin was Cornelius.
Yeah, he didn't have to put on any fucking makeup, so he's stuck with it. They did say that he signed on to do the first movie an hour after reading the script. I don't think I saved it, but he was saying that he never connected with the character quite like Taylor, where he believed in all Taylor's ideas.
It's interesting too with the makeup thing, because I don't know how long it would have taken to put those guys in makeup. I mean, the techniques are better nowadays, but you even still have how many times has that ended franchises or characters because people don't want to do makeup? Like, that was the big reason that Jennifer Lawrence hated doing Mystique after a certain point, because she was just like, oh, this makeup's too much. Like, I don't want to have to put this on every single day. And that was...
And most of the time they're doing her, like, entire body.
Yeah, that was a full body one. And the same thing with... that's why, like, Ron Perlman didn't want to do Hellboy 3, because he was just like, oh, I'm sick and tired of putting makeup on for...
8 hours a day.
5 hours a day. Yeah, just to do these movies. Like, I'm sick and tired of it. Like, I just want to play a character, or just want to be in a movie where I can just play my like with my own face, like not have to cover up all the time.
Then you have Doug Jones that doesn't give a shit.
No, he's full on. He's dedicated to the makeup.
He's like, do you mind if I put makeup on? Because I don't feel comfortable without it.
Yeah. He's got to load up on it. So that's an interesting thing that even like 50 years ago, they had the exact same problem of being able to find actors that would be willing to go through that, of which, again, I'm sure that was an insanely long process and they didn't even have all the modern techniques we have now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, for the most part, though, they cut out a lot of the apes. That's why the mutants are in it for so long. I'm almost surprised that they even bother showing what they really look like, because they could have just kept them as humans and said, yeah, they're just evolved to telekinesis.
Yeah, it's surprising that they showed like everybody. Like I could see them doing like only like one face reveal. Like they didn't want to do the makeup for every single person there.
I mean, even thinking something current like The Walking Dead, they would do the ones that were going to be like your A zombies, your B zombies, your C zombies. Once you start getting farther back,
it's like a dude in gray makeup. Crap.
Yeah, we just
they look like the original Dawn of the Dead ones. Yeah, they just have like blue paint and some blood. Which that's what the actor that makes Charlton Heston, Taylor and Brent fight each other. He said that was like a very difficult shoot. He's like, because you have to put one face on, then you have to put the other face on, then you're wearing like wool robes. He's like, and oh, by the way, you can't sweat, because as soon as you start sweating, all your makeup's gonna peel off. So you have to stand there and you have to contain your heartbeat and you have to like not be getting hot. He's like, oh, by the way, they have set lights on you that are like blasting down on you with heat.
Hey, even honestly, when they show him outside in the desert, I think I look at somebody like Nova and Charlton Heston, and I guess even the guy that plays Brent, they're like bare skin. So you're like hoping that they're wearing sunscreen. And then you see the people in the ape suits, and you're like, holy shit, like, they're definitely getting heat stroke and those things. Like, this is the movie, too, where they drive past, like, the camp, or they ride past the camp.
Yeah.
And there's just so many of them. I like the one that's, like, doing a headstand, that's what I mean to say. I was like, they only had one person that's like, can you do that headstand while we drive by? Yeah, sure. Those suits, though, too, it's weird, because some of the suits in the future movies look awful, but in these ones, like, I'm still kind of impressed. Like, you don't really see how they get into it as a suit. There's no like seams or anything that I can see.
Yeah.
I mean, they are wearing clothes, so maybe they're hidden under the clothes if they can zip something up and then put like armor.
That's what I kind of would assume. Yeah, that's kind of where I figure you would hide that type of stuff.
But like, some of this stuff's weird. Zay, like, marching into New York, not really knowing what they're going into. I mean, they're really taking a lot of assumptions in this as to where Taylor went. And then the illusion thing almost makes zero sense, even though Zaius was right about it, where he's like, this is an optical illusion.
Yeah, just rides into the fire.
Yeah.
It's a weird moment, too, that's like, I don't know. This movie is, I think, only rated PG, and I'm sure, like, kids went and, you know, parents took their kids. Oh, what was your favorite part where they were crucifying the apes and they were all screaming at the top of their lungs and fire was roaring everywhere? Like, it feels like a very traumatic scene that for a movie that, again, kids were going to see.
Hey, the cell fight where they slammed that guy up against the metal prong and then the door slammed into him, so he was stuck to it. I was like, wow.
Yeah, they got some pretty brutal stuff. Yeah, Taylor's death even for like, or not, well, yeah, Taylor's death. I meant Brent's death, where he gets like machine gunned and he has like a big hole right in his forehead with blood running down. I was thinking to myself, I'm like, this movie's rated PG, right? I'm like, I know this is before PG-13 and this movie is definitely not rated R. I was like, this is a very violent, bloody ending.
They machine gunned down that mutant too. That's like, yeah. Brought the bomb up.
That it gets intense towards the end there. It definitely starts to get very violent.
You're right. When they shoot Brent at the end with the machine guns, it reminds me almost of Inglourious Basterds, where they're shooting Hitler. Like, he's brutally getting shot, and, I mean, there's a bolt hole in his head, and squibs are coming out where he's wearing clothes, and the rest is just, like, some blood splashed on him.
Yeah.
It's the imagery is still very, very intense of him bounce all around while the bullets hit him. Doesn't seem very fair.
Yeah. It's an interesting... It's an interesting way to go at the end there. I don't hate this movie. I actually like some of the ideas in it, but I feel like where it gets everything kind of gets lost or kind of like muddled is that it's very hard to find out or figure out, I guess, who you're supposed to be rooting for in this movie. I mean, Taylor's not in it for most of it. So like your main character is Brent and Nova. Nova doesn't talk. So she's, you know, she's all just doing like pantomime. And I guess she wants to get back to Taylor. Brent's just like wants anywhere that's not in the Ape City, but he doesn't really even seem like he has that much of a plan on where to go.
I mean, he goes right to the Ape City.
Yeah, he doesn't have that much of a plan. So then you're left with, you don't really care about the your two leads all that much. Taylor's not in it for most of the movie. The apes are going to war, so you're kind of like, oh, okay, I guess then. And then you get the mutants, and you're like, okay, what do the mutants want? And their whole thing is some weird warped, like, well, we don't make people, where we don't hurt people, we make people hurt each other. And it's just like, by the end of that movie, I'm just like, who's supposed to be like the hero that I'm supposed to be like, man, I want that guy to survive, or I want that guy to win.
The movie has good ideas, but it caters to somebody who's never watched the first movie. They definitely made it so it stands alone. You can kind of understand what was happening beforehand without following any more of it. I don't know if it's just because they rushed production too much. Like, maybe they were more focused on makeup and big set pieces, because they do have a lot of huge set pieces in this still. Like the burning spaceship, everything that's underground, the bits of the Ape City that you see. There's a ton of it. And I think that's just the thing. It's like they kind of do things in a boring way. They tackle going back and bringing Zira into it in a boring way. They have a protagonist that's almost exactly the same as Taylor, where he's just confused about all the same things that we already know. And he has his revelation that they're on Earth too, when he realizes he's in New York. I don't know why he drinks water from that fountain that looks gross, but...
I had the same thought of like, he looks surprised when he's like, oh, this tastes disgusting. And I'm like, it doesn't look good. Why would you think it was going to be good?
It looks like water that's stale. It's been underground and moldy, or, you know, some shit growing in it.
Part of it, I think, is that the script obviously was written by one of the producers who, you know, probably is not a...
Nova is one of the producer's girlfriends.
Oh, that's an interesting fact I wasn't aware of either. Obviously, that guy's first thing, he probably isn't writing. He does producing, but, you know, so when that's one of your credited writers, you know, you've got some story issues maybe. But and I think one of the other things is this was directed by Ted Post, which, you know, we talked about in the last film. That was Franklin Schaffner, who directed some other fairly decent
Franklin
films like
J.
Yeah, I forgot about the J.
Well, and I called him John, and you're like, all confused.
Has to be like Michael B. Jordan. Who's the other big Franklin Schaffner that he had to make sure he put the J in for?
Born in Japan.
Yeah. You know, he did movies like Patton and Papillon. Like, he did some pretty decent, you know, big epic films to go along with this, which that's why he couldn't return to this film, was because he was in the middle of shooting Patton.
He really screwed up.
Yeah. Too bad that was an Academy Award for Patton. Yeah.
Okay. That's
really should have won the Academy Award for Planet of the Apes, but they gave it to him for Patton. That was a makeup one. They had to give it to him because
he felt bad for him.
Yeah. So, and I had to look up after I watched it, like what else Ted Post had done, because I don't recognize his name all that much. Which his only other big movies were two Clint Eastwood movies. He did Hang 'Em High and Magnum Force, which is one of the Dirty Harry sequels, which I would say like Hang 'Em High isn't, out of all the Westerns Clint Eastwood did, I don't even know if that's in the top five. And then Magnum Force is, again, a Dirty Harry sequel. Although he did some Twilight Zone episodes. I'm not 100% sure which ones, but, you know, he's got a little bit of a Rod Serling connection there.
Yeah, but the only bad thing about it is he's carrying... The Twilight Zone episodes do a really good job of carrying Rod Serling's voice forward.
Yeah.
Or Richard Matheson or whoever the hell's writing those episodes. But yeah, they don't have writing... They don't have that skill themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like hindsight kind of changes things. Because there's a lot of things in this movie that I think could have been so much more interesting. Like, instead of doing... You didn't even have to do the whole Brent thing. Cut Brent out of the goddamn thing. Just, I mean, you could start with Ursa saying, we know the direction that they headed. they've hurt some of us. We're going to find him. We're going to kill him. And you could have most of the movie following the apes, as most of the sequels end up doing anyways.
Yeah. I think it's the direction they should have gone.
And then they could have kept things mysterious, because I do like the idea of them worshiping the bomb, but they do such a shitty, like, we know it's a bomb. First of all, it doesn't even look like it would be an atomic bomb, but it looks like it's a missile of some sort.
You sound like Sacha Baron Cohen from The Dictator. Why does it have the point? It doesn't need the point. It's a bomb. Yeah, but I've seen the point. Oh, what, in Looney Tunes? No. In research, it always has a point.
Yeah, it's like spray. It's like gold. It's got the alpha omega, so you know it's the beginning and the end. It doesn't bother me. I really do think it's kind of a bold choice to decide to blow up the entire planet at the end of this movie. And I think it carries over into one of our favorite shows, Lost, because it has that same sort of, like, the atomic bomb goes off and it goes straight to the, like, the fade to white and leaves you on a cliffhanger, except for there is a narrator that basically is like, and that's how Earth ended, the end.
Yeah, there's another thing, like, kind of how we were saying, like, maybe if the movie would have followed, like, got rid of Brent and just followed more of the apes, I think maybe another interesting thing would have been, even with the mutants, like, maybe make them kind of the same way, like how we were saying, like, don't show that they worship the bomb, like, make it seem like almost like they're kind of more normal. It's basically right off the bat, like, they kind of have that big reveal of them pulling their faces off, and it's, oh, they're mutants, and it's kind of like, well, we already know they're
even
mutants.
Even before that, they're, like, hurting them by, like, projecting thoughts in their heads.
Yeah, like, we already know they're mutants, so it's not really that big of a reveal. Like, it would have been, I think another more interesting idea would have been to go with, like, make them seem normal, or make them almost seem, like, weak. Like, oh, you've got to help us. Can you give us information on the apes? We've been trying to, you know, escape, and we've been trying to do this. And, like, make them seem, like, more sympathetic, I guess, so that you can understand, like, Brent might try to help them and he would, you know, give up the secrets of, oh yeah, I'll help you guys, you know, the apes are going to come here and they're going to kill you all, and they're like, oh, thanks for being so helpful, and then, like, reveal that they're actually more evil and, you know, not as kindly and weak as they kind of make themselves appear to be.
Or we saw with movies, recent movies, even like The Force Awakens, you could have not had Charlton Heston in any, like, not until the end of the movie, and just had some sort of, like, the apes are searching for him. They're going to find him. And if they find Nova without him, it adds to the mystery, as opposed to the really bad effects of fire and him falling, like, being erased out of that scene that is, like, so odd. Because I think even if Nova's very primitive, I feel that she's going to know that he went into, like, a wall or something.
Yeah, but she can't tell anybody about it.
I know, but you think she would have just followed him in or something, yeah, well, you know, yeah. Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, you think she'd just go over there or something like that. Yeah.
I don't know, too. I feel like they should have made her smarter, because Charlton Heston has some weird comments about impregnating her and starting a colony that I'm like, this is so creepy.
Those were his plans with Stewart, so, you know, that's what he was here for.
Hey, again, even Stewart's thing made no sense. Yeah. They should have sent more women, or at least 50-50. Like, it didn't make any sense. They're just, like, proving their point that we need women to survive. Like, you killed her off right in the beginning. They're stuck on this planet right in the beginning.
Yeah.
And were there no people with blonde hair? Because they had that really weird moment, too, where I think it might be Zaius, but I actually don't remember, where they're looking at the one mutant with, like, the very blonde hair.
Yeah, that was that even seemed like in the first movie. I thought that's because if you do look at all the other people, like all the other primitive people, like Nova and the rest of them, they do all have dark hair. Like Taylor stands out. And we kind of brought up how they kind of sit there and go, oh, he was wearing weird clothes. It almost feels like it would make more sense to be like the one with light hair. We've never seen one like that.
Right. And I think when they find him, too, he has like almost nothing that resembles space clothes anyways. He picked up like some underwear or something. I don't even think it's like
space underwear.
He doesn't even have full on pants. He has some space underwear. Yeah. But it's kind of weird too, because they go back and forth. They call him Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
You think they would just stick to calling him Bright Eyes, kind of kind of taking his power away from him instead of calling him by his name, but they don't. And it is, I do like the scene, the short scene with Zira where he comes in and she's like, Taylor? She can't recognize that it's not Taylor.
All you humans just look the same.
Mm-hmm. That's the that's the best commentary they got in this entire movie.
Yeah. That was the only
all humans look the same. The idea at the end of the movie too was that Charlton Heston, I guess, was gonna set off the bomb on purpose. And then I guess they wrote it to make it seem more like an accident. Which I don't even know what is better. He survives for a long time after being shot. He gets to joke with Zaius. Zaius is like, the prophecy's true. And he's like, haha, I know. We're going to bring, known. You bring destruction to the earth. You're damn right we do.
Yeah. Now I'm going to do it one more time.
I mean, they didn't really plan the series out too well, but I don't think I would have planned a sequel if I was writing the first one, I would think it'd be one and done. Like, sequel wouldn't be in my mind at all. But then I don't know where they go wrong with two. Maybe it's just that they said we need a human character because we don't want to follow a person around in a suit as much as possible.
That's still very much a producer's mentality sort of thing, it seems like. I mean, we even had that recently with the new Mortal Kombat that came out, that they were apparently someone at Warner Brothers, like a higher up or executive, was like dead set that they had to have the Cole character, who I think works fine. Like, I don't think he's terrible. He's not like annoying or anything like that. But someone there was like, oh, we have to have this character. And they were like, why? Cause we had to have someone that the audience will identify with. And it's like, I could have watched that movie without him as a character and probably been just fine. Like, he didn't need to be there. Like, he's fine. He didn't make the movie bad.
Honestly, he was better than Charlton Heston. He would have been probably better in the first movie.
Yeah, he's still pretty good, but there is still that mentality.
If he was in the first movie, he would have carried over into the second movie, and there wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah, there's still that mentality from I think, like, executives, perhaps, where they just have that idea of audiences are stupid. You need to make sure you tell them everything, and you have characters to explain things to them.
Exactly, and that's why the first one worked so much better, because I feel like there was at least an argument for, we're going to find out eventually, so just, like, let's play with it the best that we can. I think I said on the last episode, too, when we were talking about comparing it to the book, the Planet of the Apes is its own planet. This is what I got wrong. And when they leave at the end of the book and go back to their home planet, then their home planet is then being taken over.
Yeah.
It's not that they were on the same planet. So they're definitely two different planets. But they both are Planet of the Apes by the end, which might come into play in one other movie.
Perhaps. We'll get to that ending eventually.
Well, not even well. As a kid, I was so confused. I was like, I don't get this. I don't understand what's happening.
This is a long, long, strange series of films. But yeah, it is still weird, and it's still very interesting to me, just the way they end the first movie and you're thinking that was a solid movie. And then when they come out with the sequel, you're like, okay, yeah, two Planet of the Apes movies. I could live with that. And then they literally destroy the planet at the end of the movie. And then they're like, guess what we're making? And it's like, please don't tell me it's another Planet of the Apes movie. They're like, oh, you know, we're making more Planet of the Apes movies. They're like, how is that even possible?
The tone change in the next one's pretty good.
Yeah.
I really like the third one, which I think's a pretty popular opinion of people liking the third.
It's probably the second best out of the original five films, I would say.
I mean, comparing this to the first movie, it's nowhere near as good. And there's obviously a lot that could have been worked on to have made it better. It's the strangest, because I guess compared to the other ones too, it is also something that could be skipped over. You could go from one to three, and they kind of explain.
They bring it up at the beginning in three, yeah, because they have to explain how they're doing anything there. So I would agree. You can.
I guess, too, I was reading that I guess it ties in with Charlton Heston wanting to die in this one. The original plan was for him to be shot when he was found the Statue of Liberty at the end of one, and then they changed it. because he had something where he was talking, I guess, like, I don't know if it was like a journal or something, but they have him basically being like, yeah, they changed the story, so don't die anymore at the end. Now he's probably like, make sure you always die in your in your movie so you never have to come back.
Make sure I'm always dead.
When did he die? Like, in the 2000s? So
it's pretty it'd recently, be interesting. Yeah, within like the past 15 years.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Well, I don't think he lived long enough to see the latest trilogy.
I don't think so.
But to see all the sequels and then Tim Burton's thing. Kind of wild when you definitely thought that you single-handedly ended a series.
Yeah, it was like, I definitely killed it.
I killed it.
It's an interesting thing, too. There was a good story on the making of that I was watching, the behind-the-scenes documentary on the Blu-ray, where they're talking about, you know, all the stuff that was going on and like how the budget got cut because all of Fox's other movies were all failing. Like they kept having too many bombs and they couldn't afford to sink too much money into a sequel for Planet of the Apes. It was at the same time that Dick Zanuck was getting fired from Fox. And so a guy had a great story about the day that he got fired from Fox. He had to go outside and he was so mad and he went to, get in his car and leave, and he had to wait for the guy to paint over his name in the parking spot before he could back his car up. So he had to sit there and watch the guy paint over his name in the parking spot, and they were like, that was maybe one of the most humiliating days of his entire life. But hey,
why would he have to wait for that? They couldn't find his parking spot without him being physically there?
No, the guy was like working behind him, like it was painted on the ground, like his name, and he had to wait for the guy to finish painting his name over, so he had to sit in his car and watch his guy work and paint his name out of the spot before he even left the building for the day. But you know,
that's a detail that makes that story more weird.
It's an odd story, but you know, then he went to Universal and made Jaws, which is, you know, one of the greatest films of all time. So I don't think he was he definitely bounced back from this.
There's a lot of ups and downs, and sadly they lose everything because of it. Or you're a terrible person and you go on making movies forever, nothing ever changes.
Yeah, it happens both ways.
It's interesting that we end with the world being blown up. And before we even get to the Tim Burton remake, there are three more sequels.
We'll get to them. Got some thoughts on those.
Anyways, this episode came out on Tuesday. Escape from the Planet of the Apes will be Friday. And we're going to keep that up. So tune back in a couple days for that episode.
It'll be a good one.
We're Cinema Demore. Thank you for listening to our Planet of the Apes episodes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you would subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.